Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe. I'm your host today, Reese Williamson, and joining me is...
James Hunt.
No, Joe, again, this ep. James, where the bloody hell is he?
Well, officially, his children have chicken pox, which is making things difficult. Unofficially, he just came back from a 5-day stag weekend, at the end of which he declared that he was going to become teetotal or else. So we can only imagine why he's not up for recording.
That is if the former is accurate as well. That's a real fucker though. For like, you know, that's a
sure,
real
yeah, yeah.
to a full on stag. It's oh and yeah. You have the chicken pox. Oh great, amazing! That's excellent news. I love that so much.
It's a 1-2 punch for sure.
Oh, right. So we are doing our March news episode. That's what you're listening to right now, dearest listeners. But we thought, and there's a good chunk of news. A lot of it happened in the last week or so. So we're going to cover that stuff, the big stuff, and some of it's fairly sobering. So we'll
try our best to make light of these
Jesus
upsetting allegations.
But there's some fun stuff. There's some fun, quirkier stuff that happened earlier in the month. We'll try and get to all of the interesting stuff. But I thought at the top of the show we could, for the main feed, we've put out a Patreon episode on a new movie release since the last news episode, and me and you have both seen another new movie release. So I thought we would start with some brief thoughts on Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, which we put out a Patreon episode on a few weeks ago.
We did.
So, listen, subscribe to that, listen to that if you haven't already and if you're interested. And then we should talk a little bit about Shazam Fury of the Gods. Both these movies pop up in news as well for sure, but we haven't recorded that episode yet, but we may as well talk about what we thought of them. So let's start with Shazam, because I do not know your thoughts on Shazam.
Okay,
you don't know mine. What did you think of Shazam Fury of the Gods?
I thought it was quite good. I had a good time. Objectively, a worse and less well-defined movie than the first Shazam. But also, I think they really looked at that one and said, what actually succeeded in this one? And they went, okay, Zachary Levi?
Mm-hmm. Levi?
Yeah, one of those. He's great. The kid who plays Freddy, he's great. So let's just make the entire movie those two. I thought, again, pretty upbeat tone, decent comedy, fun action sequences. I enjoyed it. I had a good time. Especially after the kind of slog of the last few Marvel movies, I was like, oh, maybe I do still like this stuff, actually.
So I'll answer the Shazam question via Ant-Man, which is that the Ant-Man episode, and Patreon listeners will know this, it started with a sort of unplanned, at least I wasn't.
Existential crisis, yeah.
Yeah, Joe sort of pitched on us and the listeners with, yeah, a proper existential crisis of superhero films. And, is he done with this? Are we done with this? Should this show continue? Big old chunk. Because, spoilers, we all deeply disliked Ant-Man Quantumania, and we spent 2 hours sort of coming at that from different angles. And I think at the end of that episode, we/I you know, sort of looked optimistically to the future, you know, to the next 6 months of releases, and wondered whether, you know, could these following movies regenerate our interest in this genre. And Shazam Fury of the Gods, I am excited to say, did not do that at all for me. I thought it was maybe 5% better than Ant-Man for me. I thought it was... I thought it was awful. I thought it was really so poor. And we'll get to it in news, right? But the kind of strange apology tour that Zachary Levi's, you know, been doing, and Rachel Zegler and Sandberg. And I find it, it's just so odd, you know, the sort of... I saw the movie that they are saying they don't accept exists.
That's interesting.
I thought it was really, really poor.
My thing was, A, it was funny, which Ant-Man wasn't, and B, it had the kind of goofy tone of Black Adam, which I also enjoyed. Like, I fully acknowledge that it's in no way like a coherent or... you know, well-constructed movie, but it was... I hate the term popcorn entertainment normally, but I think this was popcorn entertainment.
Yeah, so I don't think there's much point in delving too much. We will record a Shazam's episode soon. That's the plan. I'm afraid to say, James, I think Joe's going to hate this.
I think he will as well, because it doesn't have the things Joe likes, you know, like a...
Good script, good acting.
No. it doesn't have strong thematics, which is what he loves. But maybe I think what he liked about the first one, which doesn't even slightly come across in this one, they really jettison that whole like.
And the fundamental issue, and this wasn't my original thought in the movie. I'd read this before, but the fundamental problem is that the character of Shazam, the idea is it's a little boy turns to a superhero. That is the concept.
Sure. And
by the time they came to make this, I think the actor's name is Asher Angel, who plays Billy Batson. He's 20, he's 19, 20. And so you've taken the thing and you've lost it. And the movie, it absolutely does not find anything to replace that. And then you also have the problem of, Asher Angel, who is whatever, 18 and trying to play someone in his late 20s when he's on screen. And then when he turns to Shazam, you have Zachary Levi in his 40s pretending to be this goofy teenager. It's like they weren't ever in the same room. You know, it's like they weren't directed by the same director in terms of what the movie was trying.
It is very much like the two characters are not the same person. And I think that's why Asher Angel is barely in the movie, you know.
Yeah, I do.
Such little screen time.
I mean, I really liked Freddie. I really liked Jack Dylan Grazer. I think I just thought had something magnetic. He was the thing that I think without him, I would have liked this as little as Ant-Man.
That's probably fair.
But we shan't dwell on Shazam too much. But we should maybe expand a bit on Ant-Man, because for those who didn't listen to us talk for 2 hours on Patreon, try and explain to listeners, you know, why we had a existential level.
I think it was because we watched sort of 2 hours of a movie where the plot didn't matter to anyone. The characters barely seemed to be in the same room together, if indeed they were even in a room, because it was all entirely CGI sets. Everything looked awful. No one seemed invested in it. They jettisoned the things that actually work about Ant-Man and replaced them with much worse things. And to cap it all off, the ending was a real sort of bum note, so it wasn't even capable of getting me excited for the next thing. I think the line we went with was Ant-Man 3 is the movie that people accused previous Marvel movies of being.
And what we were a little bit more mixed, I think, on what is inarguably the sort of bright spot that came out of Quantumania, if you can call it that. And you know, we'll get on to. This ties into our first news story. Of course it does. Mm. But before we get to that, what did you think of Kang, you know, and of that performance by Jonathan Majors?
I enjoyed the performance, and I think it was the one thing about the movie that did work, which is good. Was good. Because if you're saying this is the thing we're going to bring back, then at least it's the thing that wasn't horrendous.
Although we
however,
well, yeah, we did two more things before we get to that. We did think that we think that and this is a little spoiler for Ant-Man. If you haven't seen Ant-Man, skip, you know, 10 seconds. That if you take it that at the end that character dies, that felt like a real shame because we'd invested in that guy and that dynamic.
Yeah.
The other variants that we meet at the end just seem like Majors doing a few other goofy voices. You know, I don't know that why we're supposed to care about them. And three, it did seem a bit silly that it ended up. It seemed like he was just another Iron Man. Like he just sort of had a you know, his suit was the power.
He talked a lot about time, but nothing he did matched up with his apparent obsession with time. It was just a sort of weird. The performance was good. I think the writing of the character wasn't.
Yeah, I thought it was abysmal, really abysmal. Joe, I was sat in the cinema for what felt like 1500 hours. Just, it's really, really questioning everything. and so I think let's move on to news now. You know, listeners, if you enjoyed our brief chat of that, well, you can hear us talk for 2 hours about a film we hated on the Patreon. Patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. I think it's interesting though that, you know, those are the two sides of the aisle. That's DC and Marvel, and in some ways, narratives spinning off both those releases sort of colour the whole month of news in one way or the other. I mean, obviously with the DC, you have the wider DC switch around. But you know, as we go into news, you will see echoes of what we've talked about there. So we should start with the biggest news of the moment, when superhero stuff breaks its way onto the Guardian homepage, as I think this story did yesterday, it's proper news. And this is the Jonathan Majors arrest and charge over the weekend. So this news broke. This what did today is Tuesday evening. So this news broke on Saturday that he'd been arrested in a alleged quote unquote domestic dispute. Today he's been charged by New York City police. We have to sort of say that this is all alleged, and we can only really, we only feel comfortable passing on the what we know from the courts. We're not going to get into the speculation. But police have said that 30-year-old woman sustained minor injuries to her head and neck, taken to hospital. And then you have different comments from the New York District Attorney and obviously from Majors' lawyer denying the charges and saying that there's evidence against them.
As a defense lawyer, probably would.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know that it's that useful to talk too much about what this means. Well, obviously, whatever it means for these movies. You know, this is a sort of darker and more human story between these two people, which we shouldn't discount. It's the timing of it is just so interesting. You know, this has come, Ant-Man, for all of its awful reviews, and it did get some terrible reviews, and lots of people seem to have really disliked it. It was a big, massive star-making moment for him, you know, and then it made a lot of money, not. It's not made as much money as probably people thought, but it's going to make, I don't know, $500 million. It was then dethroned in the US box office by Creed 3, which, you know, I don't know if you've seen this, but I have seen, which I think is a terrific movie, which Jonathan Majors is incredible in. And then a couple of weeks after that, this, and then you had, again, this is even more, speculation here. Say you had a lot of Twitter accounts, you had a lot of sort of Twitter reportage over the weekend of bad reports of Majors in the Yale acting community.
It was former college mates of his and people who were in the kind of scene with him, speaking in very negative terms about his behavior and reputation from that time.
So, yeah, I mean, nothing, you know, no real statement from Marvel yet that I've seen, I don't think, you know.
Yeah, it would be inappropriate at this point, I'm sure. But, I think, as ever, when this sort of news comes out, the primary concern is not what Marvel going to do for Phase 5 now. Like, as much as we might joke about that, the human cost of this is more important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Marvel can continue without an actor if they need to. Mm-hmm. But if he is guilty, I hope he gets the gets the treatment he deserves. And if he's innocent, I'm sure the courts will determine that as well.
Yeah, I was good. I'll speculate. If I was going to speculate, which I'm about to, I think he's probably not in any more MCU movies.
Yeah, I mean, unless there is some kind of full exoneration, which, let's face it, doesn't seem very likely. I don't think he would be fit to headline a movie, even as a villain. And I think I wouldn't want to watch him anyway. So
yeah, we'll see. I'm sure we will return to this news story, but nothing much more to say at the moment. I think next story, a happier one.
it would be hard to go sadder.
Yes. Although I think it's weirdly tied, because this next story dropped yesterday, and I wonder whether it's, you know, they're trying to, this is cynical, right, but trying to push down in the, you know, down on the, which is the major story, because this is the story that Liv Tyler, who, you know, was a bit, definitely had a big movie star period, you know, although she's not there anymore, but that's a name that people know for sure.
Empire Records, Armageddon, 100%. Incredible Hulk, yeah.
Yeah, she had a run, Incredible Hulk, as you say, in 2008. It was her sole MCU appearance until now. She is back. And I think this isn't, Marvel have announced this, this has come from THR, but she is back in Captain America, New World Order.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's going to be one scene of Betty Ross. But, you know, a welcome one, a welcome return. It's always fun to see those old faces. What I think, though,
yeah,
this sort of suggests to me that all the kind of speculation about Harrison Ford playing Thunderbolt Ross because they're going to do some kind of Red Hulk thing
is right.
It seems right. I can't think of any other reason you would be pulling in more of that mythos in a movie that, let's face it, doesn't need to have Thunderbolt Ross in it. You know, they could have easily retired the character or replaced him with someone else. The fact that they recast him and brought
as a major star,
and then brought in, you know, the only other connection he's got in the MCU as it stands, that suggests to me that big things are afoot.
Yeah, although I do think it's interesting that, you know, because this movie has slowly accumulated kind of a big cast list, actually. You know,
because they've
popped in those Hulk characters bit by bit, like the leader and Thunderbolt Ross, and then you've kind of got the Captain America, Falcon the Winter Soldier TV show sort of characters too. So and then some new characters too, like what's the Israeli, is it Sabra?
Yeah,
so that's a new character. Yeah, you've got sort of, yeah, it's a pretty sort of interesting, in a real kind of old school comics way, like an interesting mashup of different little corners of the comics universe. But who's not in this big cast is Mark Ruffalo. You know, there's no mention of him, and I think that suggests even more so that Thunderbolt Ross is a Hulk, because you know why would you bring Liv Tyler? You know, who people. You know, Ed Norton played Bruce Banner in that movie, and Mark Ruffalo is, you know, ostensibly is the same character, right? And bringing Liv Tyler in sort of just recast. Speaking of recast, my guess is that Ruffalo would, you know, feels now like he has to be in this at least in a cameo in a scene with Tyler, right?
Maybe post credits. Yeah. Is this coming out before or after Thunderbolts? That's a question.
This is coming out before Thunderbolts, I think.
Okay.
I mean, this is coming out in May 2024. This is coming out in basically a year.
Fair enough, then.
Only a few MCU movies away, really. This is maybe three movies away? Could that be right?
Yeah.
I also think the more they announce, the more they announce cast members and the closeness of that release suggests that the lead, you know, well, who do you think the villain of this movie is, right? Because they, of all that cast, you've got lots of names, but it does feel like the villain's going to have to be either either the leader or Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of wonder that, I guess you could thematically make a case for the military being the villain and, you know, having a version of Captain America who is not, you know, the sort of military puppet that Steve Rogers was in much of his time in the role. You know, and that's the thing that Marvel has been criticized is, you know, the famous superheroization of the military industrial complex, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to use, you know, Thunderbolt Ross, a general in the army, as a supervillain alongside the leader, you know, you can see the leader turning him into Red Hulk, into a new super soldier. I think that would make a compelling villain, and it would be an interesting story to tell with that version of Captain America. Mm. What surprises me about this is that, other than that, I can't really see any way to tie the character of Sam Wilson and Captain America into that whole side of the universe. Like, it just seems weird and fantastical for a version of the character who we mostly know from doing the kind of espionage, low level, you know, fighting terrorists kind of thing. So it's a big swing to be like, oh yeah, now maybe he's going to fight a Red Hulk and a super intelligent, you know, green guy.
Yeah, so it, in a way, that story as you've just posited, and, you know, obviously we don't know, but it all, that all sounds kind of quite like comfortably old school in a way. Like that all, you know, that all just that doesn't sound like a.
It doesn't sound like multiverse nonsense.
Yeah, like, or like a genre twist on a super movie. That sounds like a superhero and a supervillain played by like a big fun actor, and the baddie has powers, and he teams up with another baddie with powers. And I don't know, just the goodie brother who has a buddy who has his own powers. Like, I don't know, and there's a love interest, and who I'm going to say is Sabra based on nothing. I don't know. Maybe that's what the MCU could do with. Actually, is a bit of. Or what's the line from which MCU movie is it? You could do with a bit of old fashioned, right? Isn't that a reference to Steve Rogers? Is that?
Yeah.
Maybe it could do with a bit of old fashioned.
Certainly, it wouldn't be unwelcome to see something that sticks to one universe and doesn't waste too much time with alternate versions of characters. But who knows? Maybe Harrison Ford Thunderbolt Ross will step through a portal at the start of the movie, yeah, and we'll be disappointed.
Having said all that about sticking to old fashioned stuff, do you think is there any chance that Liv Tyler in this gets to play at some point the weird red like Vulture Hulk?
The Harpy,
right, that was in whose run was that?
Al Ewing's Immortal Hulk, are you talking about?
Which I think is one of the best comic runs I've read in the last 10 years.
It was fantastic, that whole
so good. And you know, Marvel do like to, you know, the MCU do like to kind of pick from recent-ish stuff that's good in the comics. And I've said this many times in this podcast, but I don't know. I wonder whether they, you know, because you have some of the pieces in that run, you know, there's the kind of military-industrial stuff in that run, isn't there, fully, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you could kind of, you know, I don't know, but you could see something there.
Yeah, although I'm not sure if this has crossed your radar, but apparently there have been rumours recently that the Paramount rights situation, which prevents them making a solo Hulk movie, could be expiring this year.
Oh.
And if that were to happen, you would look to, I think, Future Imperfect and Immortal Hulk as the two big Hulk stories that haven't really been looked at.
Interesting.
So I will be unsurprised if we see a Maestro version of the Hulk, which is the kind of evil mastermind Hulk from the future, in Secret Wars. But I think if you're doing a solo Hulk movie, Immortal Hulk would be a good choice.
I mean, it would be very weird, though. That's a very weird comic.
Well, it would be weird, but, you know.
I don't know how you make that into, like, a normal movie.
I think you could. It's hard because of Ruffalo, right?
Mm.
Immortal Hulk is very horror, like body horror, mystical weirdness. it will be hard to spin that tone into the MCU, and if you don't, then you sort of lose what makes that comic great. I think probably Future Imperfect Maestro Hulk is more likely than Immortal Hulk, but either would be interesting.
Okay, I've got two more what I'd call big stories, big fairly recent stories. But you decide, do you want the Marvel one or the DC one?
Well, let's do a DC one, why not?
Okay, so this is, we've talked about this a bit already, but this is, I thought we could talk a bit more about the Zachary Levi weird Instagram videos from the last week.
What, you mean where he's transforming into Jordan Peterson?
Just somebody explain this. What is he thinking? Somebody talk to me.
The only thing I can say is I think actors have weird egos, and his has taken an absolute pounding.
So this is for context, listeners. I think there's been a few of them over like multiple days, right? Or maybe he recorded one chunk and he's releasing it separately. I don't really know, but Zachary Levi's been this movie has it bombed? I mean, it's kind of close to bombed. It made 30 mil on its opening weekend. It had like a 65% drop on week two. This movie is going to make. Well, it's going to be lucky to make, what would that be? I'm just trying to do the maths quickly in my head. lucky to make 200 mil probably, which for a movie that costs probably around 100, over 100 mil, good time of 100 mil, that's a real, it's not a catastrophic Heaven's Gate-esque bomb, but it's pretty close to the B word. And also I find that funny thing with movies where, it's sort of most, especially with traditional Hollywood movies, like the opening day, the opening Friday, you sort of know, you mostly know if it's going to, how much money it's going to make, how much money it's going to end up making. I find that funny.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Its fate is written from the moment people go into the cinemas on that first day, like the narrative is set.
Yeah. And so he's been releasing these videos about how the cinema score or the audience score is high, and it's sort of, he doesn't understand it, and how, the Rock nixed a JSA cameo at the end of this. That's a very light spoiler for Shazam, and nixed a Shazam cameo at the end of Black Adam, and went for Superman cameo instead. And then Sandberg's out sort of saying he's done with superhero movies. And I don't know, it's just, and you tie it in with the post Black Adam Rock sort of equivalent, he's sort of done, he did the same version of this. I just find it all, it's a bit embarrassing. It's a bit, I don't know what Levi's trying to do from this. And I was, I watched all of Chuck. That was the first thing I'd seen him in. And he probably hasn't had the career post that he would have wanted, but he's a rich, successful, handsome, powerful movie star, especially after the first Shazam movie. I think his stock definitely went up, and this is probably the end of his, big sort of movie star career, if you want to call it that. Probably that's, these windows don't stay open for very long.
I think there's only a limited amount of space for, man children who can do comedy.
Yeah. And I also think, we will disagree on this, I imagine, but I think he's embarrassing in the movie as well. But I think his stuff worked for you a bit better.
I know what you mean. I think the performance has, it's trying very hard.
Oh, boy.
I think it works because it's consistent with the previous movie, but I get what you mean. Yeah, it's not like a tour de force that kept me watching. It was decent comedy.
Did you see Rachel Zegler's tweet about this or tweets?
I did not.
No, so she's sort of similarly, she's defending the fun she had making the movie, which fine. Not going to take that away from anybody, but that raging against the box office, and I guess probably what it is that I saw the movie, didn't like it. You saw the movie, liked it more, but the critics there is a, you know, with Rotten Tomatoes, you do get the sense of a critic's consensus that you just have a number for that. And you also have a number of the box, you know, you have a box office number. Those are two pretty sort of fixed numbers. But then the rest of it is so ephemeral, right? Like, what are real people, quote unquote, real people? There will be some people that have watched this and liked it. That's a fact. There will be some people who made the movie that think it's good. Not all of them, but maybe the people at the top, maybe. It's got to be this weird disconnect, maybe, when this happens to you. If you're this, you know, Zachary Levi is the face of the movie, right? Sandberg, Daryl F. Sam, God, is that his name? The director, you know, he's directed the movie. And I get that there must be a disconnect. But then me, as someone who saw it and didn't like it, I don't see what they see. So it's interesting. It probably speaks to our like binary culture, right? It's sort of movies are good or bad, right? They're flops. Sure. There's not a lot of room in the middle. But you know, that's true. But also, I think Levi on his Instagrams are a bit embarrassing, and you know, I think that's the end of his movie star career. So I don't know. All these things are true at the same time.
I do think someone should have possibly taken his phone off him and just said, listen, you're not helping anything here. You're not helping yourself. You're not helping the movie. No one's going to change their mind based on this. In fact, if anything, you're just drawing attention to what a bomb it was. So, oh well.
And we'll see, you know, all of this obviously is in the story of the DCEU switchover, right?
Well, that's what I was going to say, which is that in a way it was sort of a dead film walking anyway. Like, no one was clamoring to see the next installment of something that has been creatively disavowed.
Mm. But do you buy that much? Do you buy that? There's obviously a percentage of the audience that go because of the wider picture. Like, that is so clear. That feels true. But, you know, look at how big of a hit Joker was, or The Batman, or, you know, I just wonder how true, you know, major audiences in the aggregate are really pulled in by that. You know,
this is the thing. I think,
I don't know.
I think for something with name recognition, it doesn't need the universe, but something like Shazam, which, you know, let's face it, didn't make a big splash with the first movie and isn't a Batman in popular culture. It needs that connection to the others, it needs the kind of narrative around the movie to be good. Whereas even if this movie had been fine, people were basically going like, well, DC is over. We just have to wait for the actual stuff to restart. You've got James Gunn coming out and saying like, here are our plans. You know, not even mentioning the likes of Shazam. What I was going to say is, I think certainly for the critics, they've already clocked this movie. Like, A, people don't remember the first one. You know, B, people don't like what DC are doing. So this has bomb written all over it.
I think my only counter to that is that, so James Gunn's the new head of DC Universe. But wait, who's the other guy with him? What's his name?
Peter Safran, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Has he got a recent project out? Right, he produced Shazam Fury of the Gods. And so, you know, so it's sort of, That strikes me then that the new, you know, leadership of the DCU would feel pretty invested in the success of this. But maybe once regimes change like that, and maybe also Safran isn't the creative lead on the direction, right? That he's the relationships guy, and Gunn is the sort of auteur of the story. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I wonder what does James, you know, because obviously that's two in a row from DC, right? But add Black Adam and Shazam, and then I just think, yeah, the Flash is this, you know, and we always have to say the Ezra Miller stuff. Not what you always have to say, but what I'm about to say is the Ezra Miller stuff aside. But you know, the Tom Cruise story on that he's seen the movie and loved it. The fact that it feels like it it is tied into the future of the DC stuff, you know, that it might set it up, right? Does that get people more interested, or does that get people sort of just more interested in what comes after? Will the reviews be able to be good through the Ezra Miller of it all? We're going to see. It's not that far away now. A couple of months away. Although I know you won't be watching it. Or don't plan it. So we might be a while before we discuss that.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, let's move on to the other. This is a bit of an industry businessy story that doesn't feature particular celebrities, but I think it's an interesting story, which is that Victoria Alonso, who's been one of the Marvel the MCU EPs for, you know, I'm reading here, in fact, 17 years, which is a long time, basically. On Friday, the news came out that she had, you know, departed the MCU. And then a couple of days in, I think maybe yesterday, actually on Monday, she's suing them for a wrongful dismissal. And actually, it looks like a real, you know, a really messy story, perhaps. And obviously, in these things, you know, I don't know how much, like, I read, because I'm a fucking idiot, I read Deadline and I read The Variety. Not like I don't read every page.
TMZ.
No, don't go down to see it. Not on page six, my friend. But you do, like, often what happens is then a news piece like this comes out, and then you sort of get, oh, we behind the scenes, you know, reporting suggests that, and it's just clearly like her rep has said X or Y, and the rep from the other side.
Off the record, here's what we want the story to be.
Oh, yeah. Source to Victoria Alonso asterisk. Actually, this is her sister or whatever. Yeah. Or her, right? So then, you know, lots of stuff has come out. Like she got, I don't think I'd plot that she got nominated for a documentary. Oh goodness, come over, it's a feature or it's a short. It's got Argentina in the title. It's not in front of me right here, but that there was some friction about whether she could speak about her political views, like back last year, back maybe when it was Bob Chapek, you know, that all the Florida bill, don't say gay stuff. And that she was sort of tried to shut down from making public statements, and then off the back of that she may or may not have, you know, then sort of had this documentary project, which, you know, it's not about Disney, but has a political angle. And then, you know, especially as that got Oscar nominated, she then got more media coverage off of that than, you know, there was all that. And then I also read in the same piece that it was perceived by this lone wolf source that she would spend quite a lot of time on her personal projects when at work. And then you have, you know, in all of that, you have the you know, because she, I don't know if it was public that she was the VFX.
This is something that I was going to bring up, which is that She was head of VFX, was it? Or like the producer in charge of the VFX? I'm not sure what the exact title was. But when she was fired, or when she left the company, rather, my friends who work in the VFX industry were very vocal about being glad that she's left.
Interesting. Okay, so there's your source. There's your Hollywood Reporter source.
Yeah, like, I don't have any particular specifics, but they were very, not shy in saying she was very bad for the FX people. We're glad she's gone. And there was even some talk, wasn't there, about how, you know, Ant-Man's FX team were pulled away from other to work on other projects, and then Ant-Man came out and was bad. You know, the effects on MODOK especially look horrendous. So there's some part of me wonders if they basically went, you know, you're supposed to be in charge of this. This film got hammered. Part of the reason is because it looks shit, and you're the one supposed to be making things not look shit. So
I guess the sort of cynical counter argument would go, you know what was shit on Ant-Man? The VFX. You know what else was shit on Ant-Man? Everything else.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't have to. There have been recent MCU projects where the VFX have been good and where the movie's been bad, and it could be that post, because weirdly enough, I don't know why, but I feel like on this podcast, when I'm listing off other executives in the MCU team, her one is always just top of my mind. Just, I don't know, from watching those movies 20 times and the credits get burned to your head. So, you know, this also could be a sort of we need someone to take the blame for some of this shittiness and to have the sense of a reset going forward, you know, sort of to the fans as well as to the, you know, stock market. We just need some. We need a fall guy, right? And here we have a little few bits of evidence, and plus the VFX being, you know, genuinely poor in these movies. But we have some other behind the scenes personal stuff that we can use, you know. And that maybe that's why she's taking the legal route, because she's like, fuck this. I know these last few movies have been shitty, but you know, this was all of our faults.
Yeah, quite.
You didn't give me the script at a decent moment, so I could arrange the VFX. You're not giving me enough of a budget to pay for the VFX that you want. You know, you're chopping and changing these movies on the fly, because and you're giving me more to do, right? I'll think about all the TV shows that have come out.
Yeah, is that a story we're doing this week?
Yeah. Wait, no. Which one? Oh, is that a story we're doing this week? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I feel like the most likely thing that happens here is they just settle out of court and we never hear about any of this stuff again.
Absolutely, without a question, that's what's going to happen.
But it would be fun if they went to trial. They probably won't.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting if they. I mean, well, no, they won't. But how much if they use kind of coded language to in public in the near future, sort of talk about a restart, or also, you know, another, whether we see the departures of some other executives, right? Because I don't know if you saw that, like, you know, there is a big Disney corporate restructure happening like this week, or phase one of three. You want to talk about phase, you know, less exciting phases than the phase one of three of mass layoffs at Disney. You know, so you could, you know, my guess is that they won't touch the Marvel structure, because that's, you know, that has given them so much success, and you know, probably Iger's just gonna let Feige do whatever he wants, but
until the money stops coming, sure.
Yeah. You know, and again, you know, Quantumania is probably going to be the first MCU. Let me just check. I can get a live. Quantumania so far has made, 470 mil. So, you know, okay. But it probably crosses 500 mil. But, you know, that's the first in a while that, you know, that it's definitely on a very different ramp than the last
sure,
years. Yeah. Movies. You know, I guess Black Widow taken out because that was a sort of pandemic release, but you know, I don't think we've had one that looks like this release since Ant-Man 2. not sure. I mean, how much did Shang-Chi make?
I think that did okay.
Shang-Chi made 432, So, you know, Ant-Man has made a bit more than that. You know, again, a pandemic release, but you know, it came out. It, you know, it wasn't, it didn't go straight to streaming, but that was 2021. So yeah, this is surely not quite done what they thought it was going to do. Anyway, let's we've gone fairly long on all that stuff, so maybe we could breeze some of these other bits. So yeah, I've got, you know, again, you'll see lots of the same threads here, but this is now going in sort of reverse chronological order, so some of this stuff's going to feel a little older. But the first one is that James Gunn he's found a director for his Superman film. A guy, he knows him quite well. His name is James Gunn. And he's making the Superman Legacy movie. What do you, I mean, we've talked about this film before. We talked about the chances that he'd write it and that he'd direct it, given the fact that he's writing it. Any further thoughts on this? You know, Roger,
I guess I'm in the same place I was, which is that I'm not surprised that he's directing, having written it. And I think, based on what I know about James Gunn and what I've seen of his work, I think it's probably a good thing. Like, it's been a while since Superman's got the kind of attention that I think he should have cinematically. I think Bryan Singer clearly wanted to do his own thing. That was a bad idea. Zack Snyder wanted to do his own thing. That was a bad idea. James Gunn seems to me like someone who really understands Superman and has some ideas about, you know, the character's relevance and importance in the modern world. And let's see some of that, please.
It strikes me that I think with, you know, with this news coalescing into some stuff, it seems clear that this chapter of DC, chapter one, if you will, is probably going to be defined by three men, which is man one, James Gunn, man two, Superman, and man three, whoever is cast as Superman. You know, that those feel like the most important pieces, mm-hmm. of, you know, because it's, I just find it, you know, it's just real, it, I said this before, it's a real statement of intent that this is the first film. It's James Gunn's, again, he's the author of this. He's not only written it, he's directing it. And yeah, just, you know, I think this is going to be, although it's you're putting a lot of chips then on in this one basket, right? And I'm not even sure, you know, I think you can make the argument that Zack Snyder had fewer chips in his one basket at that moment than James Gunn now does with this. You know, you're just putting a lot of, you know, you're really raising the stakes that it's not just that this movie is a slam dunk, you know, because you know, those things are unpredictable, but yeah, you're just, I wonder how he's sleeping at night, I guess, at the moment.
Yeah, a lot of Gaviscon is my suspicion. Yes.
And also, you know, I've been seeing, you know, especially with this, like what happens with Guardians, you know, I would imagine that they, you know, hell, they might have already cast Superman, but they will be holding that news back for post Guardians. So maybe we'll get that in, you know, in June. But the Guardians press tour is going to be even more interesting from a James Gunn, Mr. DC.
I think it depends how well Guardians is doing.
Well, and that's true too, right? What if Guardians, you know, you could definitely, back to the previous conversation, you could definitely see a path where Guardians is badly received, the VFX is shitty, and it makes less money than anticipated. And then, yeah, and all of a sudden, was this guy the right guy? Was this guy and the guy who directed, or the guy who produced the previous bomb, Peter Safran, were, you know, was this the right bet? But hey, you know, they're gonna get their shot at least. This one I've left in for you. This is what I would call a James story, which is that I don't know if you're aware of this character's name is Daredevil. He's funny, mm-hmm. He's blind. He's a lawyer. I was going to call him Without Fear. Right, yes, that's the man with that. He's the man without fear.
Yes.
One of his old friends is going to be in the TV show with him, John Bernthal's Punisher. I was surprised by this news. I don't know if you were.
I think it's fair to say I was surprised, yeah.
Yeah.
Just because I sort of assumed they were doing a kind of lighter,
yeah,
you know, not necessarily fully comedic, but a more upbeat version of Daredevil. And regardless of what you say about the Punisher, he is not an upbeat guy.
No, and he loves guns. That's what
he loves guns. He loves them.
And one thing that can be a little bit dicey in our modern cultural climate is guns. and people that love them and love shooting them. Although I say that, the most recent John Wick movie, and that's a guy that loves guns, made an absolute fuck ton of money last weekend.
Well, that's a conversation America needs to have with itself.
Yeah. And do you think they're willing to do that and happy to?
No.
On the same weekend that there was a mass shooting at a school, right? It was also the John Wick makes $75 million. Those things don't seem to connect up.
It's not for us Brits to connect the dots on that one, I think.
No, that's fair. I think my take on this is that if it was, you know, if it was not any other actor, but John Bernthal just makes the return of the character feels undeniable. You know, he's even gone more from strength to strength since he was in the Daredevil show. He's just, I think he's fantastic. I love John Bernthal.
He has a proper charisma, doesn't he? And his Frank Castle was fantastic. I'll be excited to see him back, even if it's just for one episode.
Well, and you know, I wanted to bring this in to talk a little bit more about Born Again because there's been other news out in the last couple of weeks. Like they are filming, and there's interesting news. Like, I don't know if we already knew this, but Deborah Ann Woll and Eldon Henson are not expected to be back, but it's not clear whether their characters are not going to be back. You know, you've had other people, you know, there's speculation that they're doing the Maya Fisk story. There's continued speculation about, is Elektra in this? I feel like other various actresses have been linked, but you know, there's obviously no casting out, and we did that already. We did the Elektra thing.
Yeah, quite.
And it's called Born Again, but it seemed, how do you do Born Again without Karen Page, right?
Sure.
And you've done Nuke, right? The show did Nuke. Is this a fourth season of the Netflix show or not?
I think it's a soft reboot in that I don't think they're going to recast anyone. I think they'll also do away with the previous people. Like, you know, we'll see Kirsten McDuffie instead of Karen Page. Or we'll see Mia, his wife, from the Bendis arc.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see characters like that instead. I think it's still possible to me that Foggy Nelson comes back for one episode or something. Like, I think if you've got 18 episodes to play with, you don't leave all that stuff on the table. But I can also see them saying, well, we don't want to just redo what we did before, so let's keep it. Let's keep it as much its own thing as we can. And there's plenty of lore to draw from.
I think I've slightly disconnected. I mean, I must have seen this before, but the fact that it's the Netflix show, you know, the next Netflix character and actors kind of renewed, and the show is called Born Again. That's a bit dumb, isn't it? that is worse than, I remember that, you know, when they called the first Spider-Man movie Homecoming, it was like, because the character's coming home. This is worse than that.
Yeah.
But it's a good comic. It's a good comic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and did I read say that James Gandolfini's son is going to be in it as well, Michael Gandolfini. Anyway,
gotta have a mobster.
Lot of men. There's a lot of men in this.
Sure.
But hey, you know, half the world, so you know, can be. this is a quick one, really. This is not intentional, but you know, this was a story about how Keanu Reeves, an interview about Constantine 2 looking like less of a sure thing. You know, this was a movie that was announced by, I don't know who it was announced by, but pre-James Gunn, they sort of announced it, and it was maybe going to be J.J. Abrams that's going to be doing it. And I just think they should make this. And because Keanu Reeves, you know, he's just having a moment right now. And I just think it would be a shame if, you know, it seems like he wants to make Constantine 2. And he might be done with the John Wicks, right? I haven't seen it, but the fourth one maybe is the end of the main story for that character. I don't know if you have any thoughts on Constantine and Keanu Reeves.
As far as I'm concerned, Keanu Reeves is only Neo from The Matrix. I'm not interested in anything else he's done.
Fine. Okie dokie.
I mean, I liked the first Constantine movie. I will lose no sleep if they don't make a second one.
Yeah, okay. And this is another sort of, here's somebody that isn't involved with the new DC era, who I wonder about that. And I didn't think we'd talked about this, but stop me if we have. This is, well, we knew that Mark Guggenheim, who is the kind of Arrowverse guy, we knew he wasn't, or maybe he was attached to Constantine, I can't remember now. But, you know, he was, we knew he wasn't really involved in any of the projects that they've announced. But so we knew that already. But he put out a post on his own Substack account. So he wasn't even like caught out by an interview.
I think we did talk about this, yeah.
We did talk about this, okay.
Well, keep going and I'll tell you.
Well, yeah, I was going to just give you some. I'll give you the quote, I'd say, which is he said on not being involved in the DCU stuff going forward. Quote, I'm not particularly surprised, but I'll be honest, I would have liked to have gotten at least a meeting. Not a job, mind you, a meeting, a conversation. We've talked about this.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Okay, great.
Talked about it last month.
Listeners, go back and listen to that. It was, what a great conversation we had. We really dug into it. Well, no, this news is only from March 6th. Anyway, fine, okay. This is what happens when I do a 7-week long dig into news stories. Okay, fine. Next up, we have a trailer, which is usually there are more trailers that drop in the month-long period, but this is the main one that's dropped in this period, which is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem trailer. This looks good, doesn't it?
It does look good.
It does.
It looks like they brought a bit of that Spider-Verse energy to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I love and I am very pleased to see. And I thought this trailer was everything you want an animated movie to be, which is fun and bold and exciting.
Yeah, and also I'd read all that in like a tweet before I saw the trailer, and so that's the stuff I was expecting. Mm-hmm. The stuff I wasn't expecting, I'm clicking through the trailer as I speak. The stuff I wasn't expecting was the sort of how origin story it looked, and as I'm watching the trailer, I did think, I don't think we've had this Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles story told before. Because how many iterations have there been now? Is this the fourth?
I mean, there have been a lot. So there were the original four movies.
But before that was the cartoon, right? Did that come before?
Yes.
Okay.
Comic, cartoon, the four movies, couple of reboot cartoons, live action TV show, reboot movies, Michael Bay movies.
Jesus, okay. So a lot.
Yeah.
And the Bay movies, those were live action, but the turtles were fully CGI, right?
Yeah. Yes. I didn't actually watch either of those.
Me neither.
They looked upsetting.
And what we haven't done this, which feels like, how has it taken this long to do just a sort of a good sort of animated family film version of the It just is odd. This trailer was fun. It really looks great. And it also reminds of, I think, how, you know, because movies like this and Mitchell's versus the Machines and, oh God, that was another recent one. Oh, it does feel like Spider-Verse came out in, what, 2018?
Puss in Boots is the other one.
So say again?
Puss in Boots is the other one.
Oh my God, of course, Puss in Boots. How that movie came out and it just has, it might just define the sort of, not just the look, but the tone and some of the camera trickery stuff. You know, there's all these fun camera things in this in the trailer for TMNT, like there are Mitchell's and the Machines, that again, they just feel like they are speaking to, and probably, you know, it's probably Spider-Verse ripped that shit off from, you know, from like animes and YouTube videos. So fine, you know, all art is borrowed, but that was, you know, that's an influential movie, and we've seen how well, like Puss in Boots, you know, a big hit, and this feels like it could be a big hit too.
I hope so. It's been a long time since the Turtles had a real pop culture moment.
But it's just it's such a wild franchise. It's just crazy that it's lasted this long in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, I always get kind of romantic about the Turtles as an idea, because they're like, you know, you had the whole Stanley and Jack Kirby thing coming up with superheroes in the 60s and, you know, redefining pop culture for the next six decades or whatever. But, like, Turtles were, it was just two guys in a garage.
Mm.
And they came up with this idea, and it just is a juggernaut, and I don't think it's ever going to go away.
Mm.
And it has such quirky and weird origins. It just is a kind of, even though, you know, the creators don't own it anymore and they've moved on and, you know, they're not really friends anymore and stuff, and there are sad sides to that story. But it's a real, you know, you can do it. Someone can do it. So I enjoy the Turtles on that level as well. I just want to say as well, Prince Charles Cinema is screening the original movie.
Oh, that's cool.
In April, and I already have my ticket for that one.
That's cool.
Never seen it at the cinema. I was too young when it came out. Really? Believe it or not.
I don't believe it. I need to see it. Okay, I've got three last news stories for you, quite quick ones. Two casting ones and a comics one. Which would you like first?
Ooh, casting ones, because that's dull.
Okay, fine. MCU or other?
Other.
Okay. Well, this one's kind of dull. or this one, I read this and I kind of went, wait, what? So did you know that they're making another Hellboy?
What?
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know.
Yeah. Really? And they've cast, so, okay. So it's from a major studio called Millennium Media. And listeners, you might have heard it's a hint of sarcasm there, because I don't think Millennium Media is a major studio. I think it's maybe like a DVD, like hack job that are making a Hellboy movie.
Is this going to be a follow up to the previous one, or completely new? Like, what is going on here?
It's a reboot. It's got a new Hellboy, whose name is Jack Casey, who I am not familiar with.
Okay.
Kind of a big guy. He was also in Deadpool 2 as Black Tom Cassidy, because of course you recall that Black Tom Cassidy was in Deadpool.
Yeah, of course.
And it's called the Crooked Man. I think I'm not even sure if it's called Hellboy the Crooked Man. It might just be called the Crooked Man. But this is the log line. The Crooked Man takes place in the 1950s in rural Appalachia, where a younger, far less experienced Hellboy gets stranded with a rookie BPRD agent. So Mike Mignola is co-writing the script, perhaps an original story.
Okay.
Production will begin in that, you know, this is, so, you know, you'll be wondering how they could afford to shoot here, but production will be, of course, beginning in Bulgaria sometime later this year. How did they get a budget for that? I don't know. What do you, Mike Mignola, should he have done this? What do we think? I guess the most charitable view is, you know, because we also always lament about there are no sort of mid-budget action movies anymore. You know, could this be the start of a whole universe of Hellboy characters that can be told, you know, at whatever $15 million, small scale? Is that a good thing?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily likely to buck existing trends and become like a huge breakout surprise hit. I think they're mostly relying on the memory of the Guillermo del Toro movies to make people come out and see it. That said, you know, original story by Mike Mignola, I'm sort of down for that.
Yeah.
And
I think I even saw there was a recent, this is an older story, but there was a recent story that someone involved, maybe even Mignola, saying that this is going to be a horror film. That's going to be the genre.
Okay.
So I think, you know, again, if when Marvel say, oh yeah, this is going to be a horror film, you're like, bullshit it is.
Yeah.
And come back. Whereas when a company called Millennium Media making a film involved, I'm going to help one that you've never heard of, go, yeah, this is going to be a $12 million horror film that, you know, we hope does like Purge numbers. Like, yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense to me. Hellboy as a horror property kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So that's, we like that news story. Okay, and then last two stories. Do you want the other casting story or do you want the comic story?
Let's save comics till last.
Okay, so this is, again, this is really is old news at this point. And there's not much to talk about, but Steven Yeun has joined the Thunderbolts movie.
Has he? Yes, Stephen Young. Oh, Stevie Young. You
know who that is, right?
No clue.
Okay. Damn it. He was in Minari. He was in Nope. He was in The Walking Dead as Glenn. I mean, you know his face.
I've seen some of these things, sure.
Okay. Stephen Young. He is an Asian-American actor. He's joined Thunderbolts in an undisclosed role. So I guess a question could be, are there any... Obviously, they could change the casting, but are there any obvious Asian-American characters linked to the Thunderbolts that he could be portraying?
The one that sprang to mind is Radiation Man.
Okay. Talk to me about Radiation Man.
He is a Chinese national who is extremely radioactive. He might be Radioactive Man, actually. I think...
I love that he's extremely radioactive.
Well, like, he's green and glowing.
Okay.
He was in one iteration of the team, and he was very cool in it.
Interesting.
But also, I think he's possibly not the most nuanced character, you know.
Yeah, well,
he is a radioactive Chinese guy who represents the fear of communist nations with nuclear power. So,
yeah. So off the back of that, so I think it's a really good shout that he could be playing Radioactive Man. It's a really good idea that I like a lot. What I would say is Deadline, when they reported this, said he would play a significant role in the film and that he could have a role going forward in future films of the MCU. So do you think Radioactive Man would fit that description?
I'm going to say no. I'm trying to think who else that description could apply to. Just in terms of you know, characters.
Well, so maybe
Henry Gyrick or someone if they can do that.
I was going to ask. I mean, you know, because if you're looking at the cast list of Thunderbolts, I don't think it's clear who the villain would be. You know, necessarily.
They're all the villains.
Well, okay, fine. Who the antagonist would be? So, is there a classic stop that thought, new thought. Could he be the originator of the Thunderbolts in the comics? Citizen V?
Citizen V. Well, no, because that's Baron Zemo, so.
Oh fuck. Okay, shit. No, fine, yeah. Never mind. Is there an obvious Thunderbolts antagonist that he could be playing in this that, you know, because he's an antagonist to a villainous team actually is a heroic character? Does Henry Gyrick fit that?
I mean, Henry Gyrick is like a government spook who in the comics is on the Commission for Superhuman Affairs, and they tend to run the Thunderbolts and, you know, push them around and stuff. So if that's him, yeah, I can see a role going forward. Probably not the main villain. I don't know. I'll keep an eye out.
Yeah, well, we will see. I'm just looking. You know, this is sort of when you were asking earlier about what comes first. So Captain America is next May, and this is next July. So I think, you know, you'll see lots of casting-y stuff and production-y stuff in the next few months of films as they start and then finish production over the summer, I guess. Okay, last story. This one, I talk quite a lot on this podcast about how. I talked about it earlier on this episode, how, you know, Disney will pull in stuff from the comics into their movies. And obviously Disney bought 20th Century Fox, you know, five-ish years ago. And therefore Disney then absorbed a load of the 20th Century Fox franchises. And it seems like the comics, Marvel comics, are launching a sort of 20th Century Studios comics sub-brand. And are going to be publishing stories from Planet of the Apes and Alien and Predator.
I mean, they're already doing that, right? I guess it sounds to me then that they're just creating a sort of separate imprint.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've talked about the Alien comic before on this podcast.
Yeah, they just had a big sort of cover promotion for Planet of the Apes comics. So yeah.
This will be that comic. I just think as comics, as me and you particularly are comics fans, it's just always nice to remind listeners that all this shit's from the comics. The comics are good. and comic, you know, comic makers and the stories they tell have fed into so much of this stuff that we have enjoyed over the last 10 years. And I just think it's always smart money to be, you know, comics are cheap. Comics are so cheap to make, and they are visual, and they are serialized. And what is the currency of modern action blockbusters than, you know, the big visuals and serialized storytelling, and that is what comics are. And so, yeah, you know, I know they have already announced there is a new Planet of the Apes movie coming, and so I'm sure this comic isn't attached, you know, isn't linked to the new movie. But some of these things, you know, some of these things are long term, right? You need to we reboot these IPs every, you know, so frequently nowadays that you're gonna kind of want to think about what you might want to be rebooting Planet of the Apes to be in 10 years now.
What other properties could they be turning into?
Buffy. I'm just reading on this article. So the Buffy stuff, right? So Buffy at Angel and Firefly. I guess those are all the Joss Whedon projects. I think those are.
I think maybe leave them on the dustbin of history for the moment.
Yes. What else? The Simpsons?
Simpsons is the big one that sprang to mind. Like, currently, no Simpsons comics being produced, as far as I'm aware.
They should make one of those.
Yeah, well, Bongo Comics shattered getting on for 10 years ago now, I think. So,
and the rest, you know, and also especially the Alien and Predator stuff. That's such a rich universe that actually I'd like to see that stuff turned over. I know they've made Alien and Predator comics since the movies came out, the originals, but you know, connected universe of, we get a Ripley comic, we could get a
new comic,
awesome.
What is it, Hicks? You get a Hicks and Vasquez comic.
Well, it's gonna be huge.
Vasquez Origins, that's what we want to see.
Vasquez Origins, then the rest.
Bishop, good old Bishop.
We could get a comic that's just about the loader that she uses. In it's just that in practical use, and it's just like a how to guide of how to use.
Yep. Seems reasonable to me.
A good idea. you hear us out. Okay, that's about all I have in terms of news. That was a good old chunk. So yes, the next you'll be hearing from us is probably in about a month for what news to come in the next month.
Unless you listen to the Patreon.
I'm going to say follow us on Patreon, subscribe to us on Patreon. You can, as discussed, listen to the previously released Quantumania episode, the Shazam episode, which we'll be recording very soon.
And Joe's going to be there. Joe will be here on those.
Joe will be there, right. Yeah. And that's at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. You can also follow us on Twitter. Joe is at JoeCunningham14. Although, don't follow him. He's not here. He's not fucking here. Don't follow him. I'm at Reese, RHYS, and James is...
at James Hunt. And we have a group account at @cine_verse.
We do always forget the group account. But yeah, until next month, thanks, James, and bye, podcast.
Thanks, Reese, and also bye, podcast.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.